In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in a few places you find descriptions about such avadutas and naked mendicants. Like you find Shukadeva Goswami also. He has a very handsome body. He is 16 years old. He has a bluish complexion. And his eyes are like lotus petals and bodily limbs are delicately formed. And he has curly hair. And such a description is given in the Bhagavatam. When he was, as soon as he was born, you all know he was born only at the 16th age. Till then he remained in the mother's womb. When he came out, he walked straight to the jungle. Yam prabhrajantam anupetam upeta krityam dvaipayano virha katara ajuhava putreti tanmayataya tarabobine dustam sarva bhuta hridayam munimanatosmi. Like this, Suta Goswami is praying to Shukadeva Goswami, meditating on this particular scene of Shukadeva Goswami immediately after his birth proceeding to the forest while Vyasadeva is running behind him crying, "Hey Putra, Hey Putra," and all the trees are echoing the same sound. Putra, Putra, Putra. There, Chakravarti Thakur writes a commentary, Shukadeva Goswami was such a sweet-hearted devotee. He could speak Krishna Katha in such great depth and full of nectar that he could melt the hearts of even trees. Like that he says. And that is the meaning of that. Another word he explains is, Tam sarva bhuta hridayam muni manatosmi. I bow down to that Shukadeva Goswami who resides in the heart of all. You may wonder, the person who resides in the heart of all is super soul. How can a soul reside in the heart of all? He says that he has captured the heart of all by his Krishna Katha. So his description of Krishna is so great that even Narada and Vyasa wanted to sit and listen to him. Such was his ability to glorify Krishna. So that Shukadeva Goswami, why he didn't wear any dress or why he didn't wear dhoti, kurta, tilak and everything and shika, keeping like any other Vaishnava. He's a supreme Vaishnava. He's a Parama Vaishnava himself. But he was naked. He proceeded to the jungle. And then later on you find he comes to the spot where many great saintly people were sitting at the bank of Ganges. And stone, there were even old women and men and children and dogs and others who followed him wherever he went. And they were throwing stones at him and all that. So they misunderstood him. They thought he is a madman. But then when he came to the bank of Ganges, everybody got up immediately and offered him prostrated obeisances and offered him an elevated seat where he sat and spoke the Bhagavatam. So all the bad elements, they all saw from a distance. Oh, we thought this fellow is a madman, but he's an exalted person. So they all left him behind and went away from there. So this is one scene you read in Bhagavatam. Another scene is this Rishabhadev also you will find when he is walking in the marketplace and other places, people are following him and dogs are barking, people are throwing stones at him. There is a picture also. If you see, you can see that. You know this? You have it in your... Saw that in your book? Plate number 5. See, some shopwala is lifting a stick to beat him. Yeah? And dog is barking. Somebody is spitting. So they've shown that scene when Rishabhadev was... But Rishabhadev is like a God-haunted man. You can see here. Correct, no? He has a halo around his face. Which means he's a saintly person. See, some lady is throwing some garbage from the top. You're seeing, no? So people of the world... So he is completely untouched or unaffected by all these people. In the same manner, you find there is another Avadhut Brahman in the 7th canto, lying in the forest alone. He is not going and mixing with the public. He is like a recluse. He is a recluse. You find him in the forest when Prahlad Maharaj is proceeding to the forest. He stops his chariot and meets that Avadhut Brahman. That you will find in the 7th canto. You will find it. He is lying in the, lying under a tree. and forest is completely still and silent. That's called Rishabh Hills. Huh? It's very close to Melukottai. From Melukottai, Rishabh Hills is just 1 hour or so. You can visit that place where Prahlad Maharaj meets the Avadhut Brahman there. So the Avadhut Brahman, he was a very rich man before. He was a well-known person also, but he later on renounced everything and went to the forest and lived close to nature, remembering the Lord, meditating on Him. And he gives many very wonderful speech to Prahlad also, about why he stopped economic development and why he is living in the forest. So that Avadhut Brahman also has practically no clothes in his body and he is like a renunciate, completely renounced. Another Avadhut Brahman you hear in the 11th canto. Yadu Maharaj, when he was going in the forest, he found one Avadhuta in the forest. And that Avadhuta was looking like a child. His face was cheerful and jolly. So this Yadu asked him, "Sir, you don't seem to have any possession at all. Nor do you have any money. But you are so happy. What makes you so happy and cheerful and you look like a young child who is ever enthusiastic? Like small children, you've seen our Damodar, how he's enthusiastic. Why they are so enthusiastic? They give all tension to parents. They are free, correct, no? They have no worry. Does he have to worry about bank balance? Does he have to worry about anything in life? So that Avadhut Brahman was also like that. He was carefree and jolly. So when Yadu asked him, "What is the secret of your happiness?" Then he told him about 24 gurus. He gave him the elaboration in many chapters on 24 gurus, isn't it? So, in this way, you will see that there are many avadutas about whom we read in the Bhagavatam. Now, some of you, when you are hearing about Rishabhadev, you know, moving like this, practically with no dress, and people stoning him, and all these things, and entering into the forest fire there, all these things. You know, one thought may come in your mind. You know, why should he unfortunately accept this type of wish? He can wear proper dress and just live in the kingdom. You know, his children are sons are good sons only. You know, be Krishna conscious at home and go back to Godhead. Why thought? Honestly tell me, how many of you got such a thought in the mind? Correct, na? You will get. Therefore I am talking about it. See, therefore, when we read the scriptures, we should know that there are different type of spiritualists. What we know of very well is Hare Krishna devotees. Therefore, outside this, we don't know much. And whatever we know is only a little bit here and there, we have read from Prabhupada's books. Otherwise, we have not seen the world. But this Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami too. Mendicants who were from different categories. There were also karmis, there were jnanis, there were yogis, there were bhaktas. Therefore, even Parikshit sometimes will ask questions which were pertaining to jnanis. When the jnanis were sitting, Parikshit saw that they were all raising their eyebrows when they heard about rasa dance pastime. First of all, they have little difficulty accepting God's personal aspect. But after they heard Atma Ramaschamanayo Nirgantha Purukrame, they were defeated. Then they had to accept the personality of Godhead. But after accepting the personality of Godhead, when they hear certain things about which present the Supreme Lord is the enjoyer, they may be a little disturbed. Because jnanis think they themselves are God. Correct, no? So whenever Sukadeva Goswami makes a statement and jnanis are a little bit disturbed, then Parikshit will ask a question and Sukadeva Goswami will give an answer which will clear up the jnanis' doubts and yogis' doubts also. So, therefore, Sukadeva Goswami is presenting all the incarnations of the Lord, which even the jnanis and yogis also will be inspired by. Like if imagine some of the... Yesterday he showed one picture, Shuddha Chitta Prabhu, you saw that? There were some fellows sitting, standing and welcoming Sukadeva Goswami with lot of hairs. How many of you noticed that? Yeah, one fellow standing like a Naga Baba, you saw, only with kopin. Correct, no? You had that picture, I don't have that here, but he showed. Very nice. Correct, no? Because all types of people were there in that assembly. So, therefore in the Bhagavatam, I'll show you one verse. Just put it nearby this one. will say this verse, all of you repeat after me. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsyam Ekam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyate Tatra Jnana Viraga Bhakti Sahitam Naishkarmyam Avishkritam Tachrinvan Supatan Vicharana Paro Bhaktya Vimuchyen Naraha. The translation.
Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work together with the process of transcendental knowledge, renunciation and devotion. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated.
Yeah. So, here he says, it gives jnana, viraga, sahitam. Gives knowledge, renunciation and devotion. All the three Bhagavatam will teach us. And some Paramahamsas are like this Rishabhadev, are like Avadhut Brahman in 7th canto, Avadhut Brahman in 11th canto, Shukadeva Goswami. Now, you may have a question, why they don't put up a proper dress? Why they are naked, wandering like this? The reason given is, such Paramahamsas, you can hear what is their realization. Their realization is, body itself is a dress. What is the need of one more dress? Dress over dress. There's no need. Body itself is a dress. That's what they see like that. And they think that this body is something what God has given us, so we are wearing it. But why should we collect some clothes from outside and wear it on this? Because we will not collect anything. That is their vairagya. They won't collect anything. If something comes on their way, on its own they will accept. For example, our Madhavendra Puri adopted the ayachaka vritti. Ayachaka means he would not do yachana from anybody. Why do you do yachana? I am God's child. If God sends me something to eat, I will eat. If He doesn't send anything, nothing, just drink water and go to bed, that's all. Similarly, they don't search for a place to sleep. They don't search for a eatable to eat. So it's a kind of extreme vairagya situation. And like, you know, if we don't wear a dress, we feel ashamed because of bodily consciousness. Correct, no? But they don't feel ashamed because they don't think they are the body. They think they are the soul. They are deeply realized in jnanis. In Jains also there is a group called Digambar. There is a Shvetambar Digambar. Digambar people don't wear any dress. They are like naked. Like generally, if you have seen small babies who are Digambar babies, so they don't wear any dress. But once they grow up, we expect that they are supposed to wear dress. But this type of advanced Paramahamsas, they have lost their bodily consciousness completely. They don't consider, therefore, the ladies who are taking bath, they saw Shukadeva Goswami and understood his consciousness is exactly like a child. He doesn't see difference between man and woman. He is completely deeply realized. That's what they are saying to Vyasadeva. Correct, no? So because our consciousness is not like that, we have to wear a dress. Correct, no? Imagine in ISKCON, everybody has to be like Rishabhadev. Little difficult, correct, no? Yeah. And you have to preach in city also. More difficult. So therefore, we may take the principle of detachment from Rishabhadev, at least. If these people are so highly detached, at least we have to cultivate a little bit at least detachment. We should not be delighting in pizzas and spaghettis and, you know, Manchurian and what else? Pasta. At least some detachment is required. Correct, no? You can't be like Rishabhadev. Correct, no? So whatever comes you know. So that hankering for the tongue and hankering for enjoyment is such a crazy thing. So, imitators, we'll talk about something about imitation which we read just now in the 9th to 11th verses of the 6th chapter. So, that Prabhupada says, imitating Rishabhadev's principles, that king in verse number 9, translation Prabhupada says that Arhat, his name was Arhat. Therefore, you will find in all the Jain temples the word Arhat you will find. How many of you have seen that? Arihant they say, otherwise Arhat they say. Correct, no? Must have seen that. So, this king, what he did, he introduced a new system of religion. And what is that religion? See, it says here, the king Arhat, being bewildered, gave up the Vedic principles, which are free from risk, and concocted a new system of religion opposed to the Vedas. That was beginning of Jain Dharma, Prabhupada says. And what is that religion? That is explained in the 10th verse. Here he says that these people, they will abandon bathing 3 times daily, which means they won't take bath, and they won't worship the personality of God, and they will give up cleanliness, which means they will not bathe or wash their mouths regularly. They will neglect the Supreme Lord. So in this way they will deride the Vedic authority, and they will deride the Brahmanas, they will deride the Supreme Lord and his devotees. So in this way their philosophy will be opposed. See, if you go to this Jain temple, right opposite we have this Chatanjaya temple, if you go, there are some pictures on the sky, you find Shiva, Brahma and all. Any of you found it? Inside in the temple hall, in their temple hall you will find. So they also have some things taken from the Vedic texts also. But they don't literally accept the Shrutis and Smritis like the way we accept. Correct? Now their acharyas, they have taken some things, some hodgepodge, and they have given their own things. And those principles will go against the Vedic principles. For example, they emphasize a lot on ahimsa. They put ashes on the hair and they pull out the hair because they say that if you shave the head, some germs will be killed. So you should put ashes or something and then pull out hair one by one, like that they pull out. They do like that. Painful process. Similarly, they say that when you inhale and exhale, lot of germs are killed. So they say put the patti they put. You have seen that? They put a patti in order to avoid killing of germs. But actually in our Hindu Manusmriti and all, what is said, there are 5 panchasuna, 5 types of sins, you cannot avoid them. Like when you pour water, or when you lit fire, or when you take a pestle and a mortar and you hit some things, crush some things for cooking and all. In these things, and also when you lit fire, in air, that time some germs are killed also. So when you lit fire, when you use ground grinding for pestle, and then when you walk on the ground, you put your foot on some germs or ant or something. Or when you inhale and exhale, which is the 5th one I said? When you throw water from a pitcher, these 5 are called panchasuna. In all these 5, some living beings will be killed. And these sins are unavoidable. Shastra says that. But Shastra say, you use your body, mind, words and Lord's service, so this pancha karmas which come can be overcome. For example, you are chanting Hare Krishna and walking on the road. Unknowingly, you put your foot on an ant. And if the ant is ant gets a fracture in the leg or something, ant suffers. So you will not be victimized by sin, because you are chanting and going. Lord will take care. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami principle. That is the principle. Correct, no? So in this way, our Shastra say that these are all very fine-tuned sins. You cannot be so attentive. You try to be attentive, but certain things are unavoidable. Therefore, what you do? Even in our eatable general grocery, some things are smaller than, too small for our eyes to detect. Correct, no? Do you agree? In our cooking, eating in the kitchen, some unknown things may go inside. Correct, no? So although we don't want, but it may go. So there, because we are ultimately offering to Lord, and we are accepting it, and the energy we get from the body, we use it in Lord's service. So those sins will be nullified. But these people, Jains, they catch those kind of small sins. Even that much also you should not commit. And Lord will say, why are you wasting your time in those things? I am standing here, you worship me. You know, focus on things in which you should focus. Therefore he is calling it irreligious. Unnecessarily, that means, you know, you should not overly do things which the religion does not emphasize. Correct, no? They are getting into such kinds of details. When they are walking in the road, they will take this thing and jadu, you know, they will keep on sweeping the road so that they will not put their foot on any ants. You've seen that? And they will not wear chappal also. They will walk barefoot. You'll see them cleaning, they put patti to avoid this. That means shastras nowhere say that you should try to avoid these five things by some means. They don't say. Therefore it is opposed to Vedic principles. Similarly, you ask them about Krishna, they will say, oh Krishna, actually they are very much against himsa, killing. So they are anti-Krishna. They will say that this Krishna is the cause of the Kurukshetra war. He killed crores of soldiers in the battle. It's a Mahapataka sin he has committed, therefore he has to go to hell. They will say like that. Actually, Bhagavatam explains, simply by glancing at Krishna's beauty, all the soldiers, Padamapurasya, it says, they all went back to Godhead. But these fools don't know about them. Because they never studied Bhagavatam. They have no knowledge of what is the meaning of spiritual absorption, how Krishna, you know, he's called a Hatari Gatidayaka. Hatari means when Krishna kills somebody, that person attains Param Gatim, supreme abode. So these people don't know fine philosophy. They only see things very grossly. You understand? So grossly, hey, he's killing so many people. Therefore, we should put him in hell. That they only decide to put him in hell. Now, who are they to put him? He's a supreme lord. So, and then they are saying, but because he also was upholding dharma, therefore Krishna will again become a Tirthankar in future. He'll be one of the future Tirthankars. He's going to come later on. They say 27th or 28th Tirthankar. Now they have given him a certificate. Okay, he can again come. This is all bogus Shastra. Completely concocted. Now you catch them by their ears and say, you rascal, where is it said in which Shastra? They will say, no, we don't follow Vedas. We only follow our Acharyas, they will say. We have our Jain Acharya. Okay, then Jain Acharyas, where did they get this information from? This information they got from their fertile brain. Because using their speculative brain, they have analyzed the Vedic scriptures. And they have written on their own. Yes. Give to Radha Prabhupada. That's why Prabhupada says that these concoctions are opposed to the Vedic conclusions.
Bro, they have translated all this in their own versions of the literatures. Bro, one more doubt I had, like how they are very prosperous. Like if you see most of the business in India, like these are the people very
actually
rich.
The Vaishyas of India only, they only became Jains. And these Vaishyas were told by their Kula Gurus and all that 50 to 75% of their earning they have to give to God. Therefore you will find them in their line, they are told that if you build a temple, Jain temple, you will you know, go beyond the wheel of samsara. You can transcend. So all the businessmen are told that major portion of the earning they have to give. Like we say give 10%, they say give 75%. You keep only very small, I mean 25% with you. They spend 50-70%. You can see how much very stout stone buildings they make. You can see that. Actually, the Kshatriyas became Buddhists and Vaishyas became Jains because the Brahmanas were atrocious in India. That's the problem. When Brahmanas became unruly, they didn't allow the Shudra people to enter into temples. So Shudras became antagonistic. Shudras and outcasts, they became antagonistic. And the Brahmana Kshatriya fight will take place sometimes, isn't it? So at one time, Buddha preached non-violence. Prabhupada calls non-violence as nonsense non-violence. Because, you know, a Kshatriya should never be non-violent. You know, in the name of non-violence, Buddha gave up after the Kalinga war. You know, he gave up all. So if a Kshatriya gives up violence, then the Antajas will come into India. Correct? Now you will find they will take over India. So Buddha taught them in Ashoka. So Ashoka became non-violent. Whole India became Buddhist. So Jara Kshatriya, Kshatriyas were leading it. And if you see Vaishyas, they had a lot of money. They also became offshoot of Hinduism and they became Jains like this. Probably likely that this Arhat king and his team, they must have had some problem with Brahmanas. So they must have wanted to start something independent and they got this. They saw Rishabhadev. They thought this is a wonderful path to take.
We say if you do dharma, you get artha. And these people, they are not doing any dharma. How they are prosperous like?
No, they can. What about Americans? They are also not doing dharma. They are also getting a lot of artha. But artha will not take them to the, you know, sublime point. It will not take them to a higher destination. Like he says, you know, Yanti Brahma Sanatanam. For that you have to do yajna. When you do yajna, then only he says Yanti. He says, what that was? After all that, Dravya Yajna, Tapo Yajna, Yoga Yajna, Tatapare, all those things. Sarve Pete Yajna Vido Yajna Kshapita Kalmashaha Yajna Shishta Amrita Bujo Yanti Brahma Sanatanam. He says three things there. Sarve Pete Yajna Vido. We do Yajna, Yajna Kshapita Kalmasha. Your Kalmash will be, sinful reactions will be destroyed, number one. Number two, Yajna Shishta Amrita Bujo. It will produce Amrit results, imperishable results. And thirdly, he says, Yanti Brahma Sanatana. That Amrit results will take you back to Godhead. So these three things they won't get. Because they are just, actually making money, Shastras say, you can make even without God. But that money will not make you happy. When you make money, you know, somehow or other. Even a thief makes money. But the money which thief makes, will it make him happy? He's always afraid of police. Anywhere he sees police, he's trembling. So he can't be happy. So Prabhupada calls it a stolen money. Correct, no? So in this way, and this dharma, I mean, but what, although you know about what I am telling you just now, you should never tell these things to Jains if you meet them. Now you may say, why did you tell us, Prabhuji? It is only for your knowledge. But you should never talk these things to the Jains, because our Gaurakopal Prabhu comes from a Jain family also. When I first met him, although I knew these things, I never told him these things. It's not proper, because you know, if you tell him you guys are anti-Krishna, you know, whatever Vedas say, you just do the opposite, then they will become antagonistic to you, they will go far away. So what you should tell them is, when you meet the Jains, oh, we heard in Bhagavatam that Rishabhadev is your founder, and we also study the pastimes of Rishabhadev. Today I will tell you how Nabi and Merudevi got Rishabhadev. What type of attitude they had and how Lord Vishnu appeared in the yajna. Correct, no? And Lord Vishnu said, I will personally come as Rishabhadev. So your Rishabhadev and our Vishnu are same. Therefore become Krishna conscious. Like that only you should preach. That is the safest way to preach. Because if you want to, and another thing is cow protection. They have Paranjpol, they call it, no? So which they protect the non-milk giving cows. They are very, because they are Ahimsavadis. So we also want to see cows protected. So if you catch the cows which are being sent to slaughterhouse and hand it over to them, they will take care. So we can make friendship with them like this. We have something in common. Yeah? Say? Correct.
They are Maheshwari also. So they are supporter of Goshala. They worship Lord Shiva. They consider this worship Dev is actually incarnation of Lord Shiva. And worshippers of Lord Shiva are always prosperous only.
Achha, the Maheshwaris, they also have Rishabhadev, this thing. They are not Jains.
Jain, all these are Jain only.
Maheshwaris also?
Jain. No, this... Maheshwari...
No, Maheshwaris chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Not all Maheshwari. Some these Marwadi people have converted into Jain. Na? So all the, if you see the Goshalas are built by Jain people.
And they are building Goshala with the understanding that we have to follow Ahimsa. So we have no problem. You follow Ahimsa and we will bring Krishna's cows to you. So you protect. So
because they are worshipping cow, the money will come. And also they have all demigods also. I studied their philosophy. All our demigod worship they do lot.
Correct.
They don't follow Paro Dharma. They follow this intermediate Dharma.
Correct.
Karma Kanda more.
Yeah.
But not Paro Dharma.
But they will call with slightly different names, like the Sachi Ai temple is there.
Correct.
That kind of
names are different, but the demigods are same. They accept Lord Shiva also.
They have Shiva also, they have Durga also. But they have given some names and other things. The whole idea is they wanted to have it as a dharma separate from the Vedas. They just didn't want to work with the Brahmanas. That's the whole idea. We don't know what problem the Brahmanas gave them. We don't know. Some problem. But they became offshoot. But the King Arhat became offshoot. Yeah?
Prabhuji, in case of Jadbharat, we see that he used to see 3 foot ahead with the ants are there. Even Narad Muni, when he gave Asushandu Maragari, he also used to swipe. So how to understand this? They were devoted, means they are like pure devotees.
Ahimsa is an insignificant part of dharma of a devotee. For ISKCON devotee, ahimsa comes in the beginning. After that, there are several stages to go high. Whereas for these people, ahimsa is the last thing. There is nothing beyond ahimsa, they know. But actually, the violence has its place, non-violence has its place. Prabhupada was in America, there was a Buddhist guru, you know, who was with his disciples. So Prabhupada was telling that non-violence is good, but sometimes you have to be violent also. But that Buddhist guru said, never, we should never be violent, he said. And Prabhupada said, if one of you, when you are walking in the road, some of your female disciples are walking with you, if a man comes to misbehave with them, molest them or something, what will you do? And the guru thought for a while and said, I will not do anything, like that he said. Then some other lady disciples were sitting there, they were shocked. What is this, Guruji, how can you say this? You will not protect us? If somebody is attacking us? So that guru got confused. And then Prabhupada said, so there is a need for violence. Like the Prabhupada established. Because this is not a Vaikuntha you are living in, the material world. There are so many nonsensical, mischievous fellows. So you have to have violence. It is not that all the time everything is goody-goody here. You know, Narada Muni told Murgari, don't kill the ants, he is not killing the ants, he is wonderful. And then Jadabharata is not killing ants, he is wonderful. What killing ants? You have to kill people, you have to kill. Not just ants. Yeah, you need violence in this world. And I just told you one example. We can give innumerable. Like you will find that in the Vedic times, the kings, if somebody is stealing, they will cut the hand in the public place. Prabhupada says that in Varpod. You read it? You remember reading it? Yeah, Prabhupada says, he will cut in front of thousands of people. Similarly, if someone has to be hanged, they were not hanged privately. They were hanged in the public. Because one monkey you hang, all monkeys become careful. Correct, no? Yeah, they did that. They did it. So violence was necessary. And if a Kshatriya is non-violent, he is criticized. In the Vedic literature, Kshatriya has to be... Actually, therefore, Kshatriyas went to the forest to kill the animals and they have to see the bloodshed. Then when they have a bloodshed in the war, they will not faint. But if a Brahmana sees blood, he may faint. Correct, no? Therefore, Kshatriya should have that valor. Kshatriyas don't say, you have to kill. But there are people who are meant to kill. They are Kshatriyas. If you don't like to act like a Kshatriya, you don't have to act if you don't have the nature. But you can't say, a Kshatriya should not act like that. You understand, no? Yeah, there has to be severe action is required. Because in this world, there are some people who need lath, some people need bath. Who needs bath? Brahmanas. And who needs lath? Shudras and lower caste people, many of them, those who misbehave. Sometimes they have to be given. Lath means a punishment. So word and the sword. For some people, word is enough. For those for whom word is not enough, then sword. Both are necessary. So violence has its place, but violence is not everything. There is also non-violence principle. Ahimsa should be followed. And when there is a place for himsa also, and ahimsa also, both have their place. You understand? So here, these people who followed Rishabha, Deva, they didn't follow him fully because number one thing, they were not Paramahamsas. Correct, no? If somebody is not a Paramahamsa, like our, he sings that song, you know, Durtamana Tumi Kisera Vaishnava. In that song he says, Pratishtara Lagi. He says, you want to go to the Nirjan place and do bhajan. Why do you want to do Nirjan bhajan? For Pratishta. For name and fame. Therefore he is saying, you are simply a Tumi Kisera Vaishnava. What kind of Vaishnava are you? He is asking. Because your purpose of going to Radha Kund to do bhajan is to become popular Vaishnava. So, but true genuine Vaishnavas never try to become popular. They do Nirjan Bhajan, but they don't want to become popular. But your purpose of becoming, imitating a Babaji is to become popular. Therefore you are condemned. Like that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says. Similarly, these fellows, Arhat and company, who imitated Rishabhadev, their imitation is for what? Huh? Yeah? For popularity. Huh? For popularity. So the new religion started, like the Prabhupada says. It's an imitation. Huh? Actually, unfortunate thing in this world, one good fellow comes, genuine fellow, he does something and goes, and there are many other fellows who imitate that fellow. Because they want to earn the same respect. And also people also treat them like that. You know, when I was in America, I met this His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj, we met on the way in our travels. So he was telling, when he became a guru, you know, Prabhupada made some of his disciples, he chose them and all, and then after Prabhupada left, some of them became guru, no? Initiating gurus. So, morning when he would want to, after he put his dhoti, kurta, everything, so one disciple would come to put his socks for him, you know, right leg socks, left leg socks, and the devotee would give him stick. So Maharaj said, why do you have to put socks for me? I can put myself. No, Maharaj, you know, Prabhupada disciples put socks for Prabhupada, so we also want to put for you. Then he said, Prabhupada was old man. He was pretty old. So they would put for him and they would give him a stick and everything. But I don't need a stick, I can walk without stick. So he was making an interesting point that people wanted to get a Prabhupada out of him. You understand, no? People were trying to treat him like Prabhupada. So he said, but I am not Prabhupada. Huh? Prabhupada was very elderly and I am very young. You know, you are trying to make me like Prabhupada, but I don't want to this type of things. Like that he told them. You understand, no? Similarly, people, generally what happens, there are fools who become imitators. There are bigger fools who make the imitators very big. Correct, no? There are, both are fools. Imitators are fools and those who make them, publicize them, they are bigger fools. Both types of fools are there in this world. What can we do? We are living in such a world. You will find this Guru Purnima came recently. There are so many gurus who are going around telling people, I am Guruji coming, you worship me and I will make you my disciple. You know that? Yeah, Brahma Rishi, and like I told you other day, Akhila Maha Mandaleshwar, Shri, 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 108. Is it not? Like that they put. Yeah. What are they saying? Oh, they say, yeah? He's saying, what these people say, Guru Purnima day, many new gurus crop up. Huh? So they are saying, Guru ko, Guru se prashna karo, Guru ke bare mein prashna mat karo. They say like that. Why can't you ask? You have to ask which parampara you are coming from. Can't you ask, isn't it? So these people are ready to give diksha, give you name, sprinkle water on your head and accept you as a disciple without themselves, while they themselves are imitators. Huh? There are plenty of imitators. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, went back to Godhead, there were some people, the 13 Apasampradayas came, some of them wanted to keep long hair. Like in 1903, there was one Navagauranga, who used to have, long hair, like God haunted. So these people wanted to, you know, imitate. Like that, there are many people like that. And Saki Beki and all this. This Saki Beki people, if you see, they will carry Tulasi on their head like this. And they will put their Uttari, they will put like a sari. And they will dance like a Saki. Yeah. They will keep Tulasi on the head and dance. Actually, these are all concocted, Apasampradayas. Where does Shastra say you have to carry Tulasi on your head and dance? Tulasi, keep her in one place, you worship her. Isn't it? Yeah, yeah. All their own things people concoct, you see. Imitation religions, you see. Yeah. Imitators of Rishabhadev. That Prabhupada is condemning. Then we proceed further. After 11. Okay, so the Rishabhadev's glories are given. You can see in your Subodhini guide. If you see in Subodhini guide, 12 onwards. See, you see page number 57, below it is mentioned there in 10 to 11. The followers of that system, bewildered by Lord's Maya, they will abandon Varnashrama. They will accept concocted religion, plucking out hair and all that. Deride the Vedas, Brahmanas, Lord and devotees. They will follow the succession of the blind, Andha Paramparaya, the word is used. They will fall down into darkest regions of existence, Tamasi. Either it is said. Therefore, nowadays, even Hare Krishna devotees also, in Bombay, I know my spiritual master had gone for one assembly where there were 5,000 Jains had assembled there. So the topic was on compassion they had given. So my spiritual master had gone there and given lecture on compassion. It was very well received. Similarly, in Pune also, some few hundred Jains had assembled and Shwetadi Prabhu went and gave a lecture, which means they are open to the Hindus. They feel that Hindus are also similar to us. Many Jains are not opposed. So therefore, many Jains are also ready to become Krishna devotees also. They are not very vehemently opposed. Some of them become very serious devotees. Actually, Gaurabhakta comes from a Jain family. But if you see, he went to the Ayyappa temple and doing a lot of Hindu services. So they go to Hindu temples also. They go. Therefore, although we should know these things, we should not talk in a way they will get put off and they will go far away. We should be very careful. It is for our knowledge we should know. Because if you are not aware of this, tomorrow suddenly they say something about their religion, you may get bewildered. Is it? Oh, this is amazing. You know what he says? You tell in the mic, you tell. This is amazing. I didn't know this.
So many Hindus, they marry Jain girl and Jain boys marry Hindu girl. It's very compatible. In our society also, they are also considered Agarwal and many marriages happen.
Is it?
And almost a Hindu culture.
That means they are not like Christian type. You know, Christians are very difficult to preach in India. You know, you go to Christian areas, where in North Mizoram and all, if you go, North East, in the villages, they will not allow your bus party only to go in. They will say, no, whole village is Christians, don't come, go away. They will say. Christian, converted Christians are even more strict. Our Ankush Jain. Ankush Jain, yeah, correct. Ankush Ji, he made the correct. The one who made our Balaji temple, correct. So that's the good news for us. So you have, they are available for our preaching ground, no problem. Fortunately, none of them are imitating Rishabhadev, wandering in the street with, putting stone in the mouth and, they are not doing that. Anyway, they are normal. They are like Hindus only. They are easy to preach to. Even if they have to imitate Rishabhadev, not very easy also. Better chant Hare Krishna and be peaceful. Can tell. Correct, no? Yeah. So see there, those are very nicely point-wise they have given. Correct, no? Very nicely point-wise they have given. And then, let's go proceed to the next page. See, glorification of Rishabhadev and his activities. You quickly read out that, glorification by the sages.
Bharatvarsha is the most auspicious, is the most pious among all lands on this earth because its inhabitants are accustomed to glorifying the auspicious activities of Lord's incarnations such as Rishabha. Yeah. Priyavrata's dynasty is pure and celebrated, for in it appeared the original Supreme Person who executed dharma for destroying the results of karma. Which yogi can compare with Rishabhadev and follow his example even
because
with his
Priyavrat, mind? Priyavrat's son is Agnidhar, correct, no? And Agnidhar's son is Nabi. And Nabi's son is Rishabhadev. Therefore, it is said, okay.
Which yogi can compare with Rishabhadev and follow his example even with his mind? He rejected all yogic perfections which other yogis hanker to attain. Phalashruti. Rishabhadev is the master of all Vedic knowledge. Human beings, demigods, cows and brahmanas, hearing and describing his activities, vanquish sinful activities.
Samastha duscharita Abhiharanam.
Create complete auspiciousness.
Parama Mahamangala.
Make one attain pure bhakti.
Vasudeva Eka Antataha Bhaktihi. Next.
Devotees do not accept mukti. Devotees always bathe themselves in the lake of bhakti for relief of the sufferings of samsara. They enjoy supreme bliss and reject even liberation, which comes of its own accord. Just by being servants of the Lord, they have attained everything desirable.
The link.
The Lord appeared in Priyavrata's dynasty as Rishabhadev, in Uttanapad's as both Prithu and Kapila, in Raghu as Ramachandra, and in Yadu as Krishna. Because Parikshit Maharaj might be thinking that the Lord did not appear in his dynasty, Kuru, Shukadeva Goswami encourages him by reminding him about Lord Krishna's intimate dealings with the Pandavas and how bhakti is superior to liberation.
That's a very special purport, which we should not miss. We will go to the 14th verse, Prabhupada's. So, see, now in the 14th verse you will find Shukadeva Goswami is exclaiming, "Oh, what shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata, which is pure and very much celebrated? In that dynasty, the Supreme Person, the Vajna Person of God, had descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free one from the results of fruitive activity," Aitri says. And then he's saying about Rishabhadev's glory, he's telling. And then Sudha Goswami is continuing in 16th verse about Rishabhadeva's pastimes and all that. And then in 17th, now you come to the 18th. 18th purport is very, very special. In the 18th verse, Shukadeva Goswami is saying, "My dear King," okay, here, see the 17th theme.
Loving service to Lord is far superior to liberation.
Yeah. So that is the 17th verse, glorifies bhakti to be superior to mukti. Because it says, last line, "For the devotees, liberation is very unimportant, because having attained Lord's transcendental loving service, they have attained everything desirable and have transcendental material desire." Similarly, 18th verse, see the 4th line. "Muktim dadati karichitsma na bhakti yogam." Hare Bhagavan, mukti bhi de dete hain, lekin bhakti nahi dete hain. That's the meaning. Muktim dadati. See, these kind of verses we have to know in Bhagavatam, because it's 5, 6, 18. If somebody is asking you, why you people are always saying that bhakti is superior to mukti, this is the verse to be quoted. Muktim dadati karichetsma na bhakti yoga. Lord doesn't give bhakti yoga very easily. Mukti bhi easily you can get. That means mukti is cheaper than bhakti. Yeah. Correct, no? So that line should be remembered always. And the purport is extraordinary purport. Read it. While
instructing Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadeva Goswami thought it wise to encourage the king because the king might be thinking of the glorious position of various royal dynasties. Especially glorious is the dynasty of Priyavrat, in which the Supreme Lord Rishabh incarnated. Similarly, the family of Uttanapad Maharaj, the father of Dhruva Maharaj, is also glorious due to King Prithu's taking birth in it. The dynasty of Maharaj Raghu is glorified because Lord Ramachandra appeared in that family. As far as the Yadu and Kuru dynasties are concerned, they existed simultaneously. But of the two, the Yadu dynasty was more glorious due to the appearance of Lord Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit might have been thinking that the Kuru dynasty was not as fortunate as the others because the Supreme Lord did not appear in that family, neither as Krishna, Lord Ramachandra, Lord Rishabhadev or Maharaj Prithu. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj was encouraged by Shukadeva Goswami in this particular verse.
You understand this? Now you read the translation. Now it will make sense now. Read the translation of the same verse, 18th.
"My dear King, the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties. He is your spiritual master."
I don't think that, you know, in the Yadava dynasty Krishna appeared and Kuru dynasty he didn't appear. Don't think like that. He is your spiritual master, he's saying. Yes.
"He is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and the director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means he worked just as ordinary servants do. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily. But he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him.
Yeah. So what Sukadeva Goswami is saying, Yadu people are fortunate, but Kauravas are, Kuru dynasty is more fortunate. Because Yadu people got Krishna in their family lineage. Whereas the Kuru people got Krishna's intimate association and loving friendship. For example, when Prabhupada returned to India, in Calcutta there was Mallik family. So the Mallik family, all members had once assembled there. And they had invited Prabhupada. And then when Prabhupada returned back, they were all very proud and very jolly that, you know, our family man has gone to America and preached Sanatana Dharma. And he has brought so much fame to our family, Mallik family, like that. So Prabhupada writes later on, they saw Prabhupada from bodily relationship point of view. Ki hamara bachcha America mein jaakar aise dhoom dham se prachar karke wapis lauta hai. Beyond that, they didn't know what he preached there. Whereas hippies were more fortunate. Why? Because hippies associated with Prabhupada, you know, shaved up and they took the mala, took diksha from Prabhupada, surrendered the life and they're going back to Godhead. While the Malliks are all sitting in their own cabin, in their own houses, you know, worshipping Durga and getting some material benefits, saying that Amara Bacha Jakar Pacha Karke Aaya Hai. Correct, no? So simply if a great soul is born in a family, that is not great. But who is taking advantage of the great soul? That makes it great. Correct, no? Similarly, Krishna was born in Yadu dynasty, but he spent most of his time with Kuru dynasty, with Pandavas and others. Like that, Sukadeva Goswami is saying. Now read the next para. The Kuru dynasty, maybe. Next para. Oh, you finish the translation? Finish the translation and then go to the second para. Translation is over.
The Kuru dynasty may be considered.
Translation is over? Okay.
The Kuru dynasty may be considered more glorious due to the presence of devotees like the five Pandavas who rendered unalloyed devotional service. Although Lord Krishna did not appear in the Kuru dynasty, he was so obliged to the Pandavas, his devotional service, that he acted as a maintainer of the family and spiritual master of the Pandavas. Although he took birth in the Yadu dynasty, Lord Krishna was more affectionate to the Pandavas. By his actions, Lord Krishna proved that he was more inclined to the Kuru dynasty than the Yadu dynasty. Indeed, Lord Krishna, indebted to the Pandavas' devotional service, sometimes acted as their messenger, and he guided them through many dangerous situations. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit should not have been saddened because Lord Krishna did not appear in his family.
Mm.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always inclined toward his pure devotees, and by his action it is clear that liberation is not very important for the devotees. Lord Krishna easily gives one liberation, but he does not so easily give one the facility to become a devotee. Muktim dadati karhichit smana bhakti yogam. Directly or indirectly, it is proved that bhakti yoga is the basis for the supreme relationship with the Supreme Lord. It is far superior to liberation. For a pure devotee of the Lord, mukti is automatically attained.
Correct, no? So, read the theme.
Encouraging the hearer appropriately by knowing his mind.
So, the speaker and hearer relationship, the goal of the speaker is to induce love for Krishna in the hearer. So sometimes the speaker may praise somebody in such a manner that the hearer may become discouraged. Another place in Bhagavatam you will find, when Prahlad Maharaj's pastime was elaborately narrated by Narada Muni, at the end of which Yudhishthira Maharaj felt that, you know, alas, you know, where is my devotion? Where is Prahlad's devotion? I am insignificant. And Prahlad is so exalted. And he felt like a poverty-stricken beggar himself, while he thought Prahlad Maharaj like a billionaire. Like that, who thought? Yudhishthira Maharaj. Then to encourage him, there also he told one shloka, which I will show you. Yoyam ki loke patabhuri vaga. Okay, we'll... Is that this one? Yoyam diloke patabhuri bhaga. lokam punana munayobhiyanti yesham grihanam avasati iti sakshat gudam param brahma manushyalingam. Very beautiful verse, a memorization verse. Yoyam dloke bata bhuri bhaga lokam punana munayobhiyanti yesham grihanava avasati iti sakshat gudam param brahma manushyalingam. Translation.
Narada Muni continued, my dear Maharaj Yudhishthir, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well and therefore they constantly visit this house.
Even saintly persons in the forest, they thought there is no use sitting and meditating on the Lord. He is not going to come. Better go to Yudhishthir's home. There you can directly find him. Huh? Like that they go, he says. Read this one, purport.
After hearing about the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, a pure devotee should be very anxious to follow in his footsteps. But such a devotee might be disappointed, thinking that not every devotee can come to the standard of Prahlad Maharaj. This is the nature of a pure devotee. He always thinks himself to be the lowest, to be incompetent and unqualified. Thus, after hearing the narration of Prahlad Maharaj's activities, Maharaj Yudhishthir, who was on the same standard of devotional service as Prahlad, might have been thinking of his own humble position. Narad Muni, however, could understand immediately, encouraged him by saying that the Pandavas were not less fortunate, they were as good as Prahlad Maharaj, because although Lord Narasimhadev appeared for Prahlad, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his original form as Krishna, was always living with the Pandavas.
Narasimhadev is only an expansion. Huh? But Krishna is the original copy. Huh? Like that he told.
Although the Pandavas, because of the influence of Krishna's yoga maya, could not think of their fortunate position, every saintly person, including the great sage Narada, could understand it, and therefore they constantly visited Maharaj Yudhishthir.
Actually, this is one thing explained in Madhurya Kadamani also. When devotees become more and more advanced, Lord has given them one very special blessing. What is the blessing? They don't consider themselves advanced. Rather, they consider themselves very insignificant. Huh? And fallen. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, look at this old Orison lady. How much love for Jagannath she has. Huh? And if only I had an iota of the love she has, you know, I would have attained Jagannath long before, isn't it? So Mahaprabhu felt that she has an ocean of love and he has no love. He felt like that. So very advanced devotees feel that they are very not so advanced. They feel like that. So Yudhishthir also felt like that. So once my spiritual master was speaking on this, he said that, you know, Yudhishthir could have easily argued with Narada. For me, no, I have Krishna bows down before me. Yudhishthir Maharaj can say that. And as far as Prahlad is concerned, for him only one of the expansions of Krishna, namely Narasimha, came out of the pillar. And Prahlad had to bow down to Narasimha. Narasimha didn't bow down. Whereas for me, who is bowing? Not only Krishna is giving darshan, he is bowing to me also. So who is greater? Correct? Now you still can ask like that. Is it not true? So he never felt like that. And at least he can say that, you know, Narasimha appeared in a pillar only once. But whereas Krishna regularly visits me. Correct? Now he can say that. So, but used to never, these kind of thoughts never cross the head of advanced devotees. They never feel like this. And how they don't understand this, it's only miracle. It's Krishna's miracle. Krishna gives them that feeling of, you know, wanting to advance more and more. So when Ambarish Maharaj became old, when he was about 50, so he called his ministers and said, I have wasted all my life. Now I want to go to forest and become a seriously practicing vanaprastha devotee. And minister said, wait a minute, what are you talking? All the work we have been doing and you are always chanting and dancing in the temple. You are doing karav harer mandina marjanadishu. All your life you did only devotion service. Then why do you say, what is the need of your taking vanaprastha? They asked him. So there in that purport, Prabhupada writes that, you know, a millionaire is never satisfied. He wants to become a billionaire. A billionaire is never satisfied. He wants to become a trillionaire. A trillionaire is never satisfied. He wants to become a zillionaire. So like that you will find, in the same manner, devotees also, even after they become advanced, they keep saying, no, I am not doing at all anything. I want to advance more. And look at him, he is doing so well. Look at her, they are all doing so well. Look at me, now I am very fallen. So they always feel that they haven't done much. So this is one symptom of an advancing devotee. So we can check whether we are advancing or not. In case we feel ourselves very complacent and self-sufficient, bahut ho gaya abhi, no? I am doing good enough. That means we are not advancing. If somebody feels that, I think, you know, I am doing too much already, you know, I think now it's time for me to relax. If somebody thinks like that, he is not an advancing devotee. If somebody thinks, I am doing nothing, I have to do much more, then he is advancing devotee. That lesson we learned. So in this way, this is 7:10:48. So, there Narada Muni encouraged Yudhishthira Maharaj when he spoke about Prahlad, correct, no? And here, Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging Parikshit while speaking about different glorious dynasties, like Priyavraj dynasty is glorious, you know, and then who else? Yadu dynasty is glorious, Raghu dynasty is glorious, and then he is telling Parikshit, even though Krishna didn't appear in your dynasty, don't think you are not glorious. Krishna, how much he intimately dealt with your forefathers and as well as with you. So in this way he is encouraging. So we should encourage the hearer appropriately by knowing his mind. Like that he is saying, yes.
In this Parikshit's case, there is something called as celebrating others' success.
Correct.
So how do we understand that Parikshit?
Actually, he's asking, why should Parikshit not celebrate the success of other dynasties and just remain cool, you know? That's the question, no? Correct, yeah. Actually, we have to understand the meaning of this type of purports. It is not that Parikshit is envious of other dynasties. He is thinking that, chhe, what is this? They are glorious, humko chhod diya. You know, nobody is looking at me. Actually, this kind of envy is never felt by a pure devotee. This wanting to become glorious by possessing the Lord is also a spiritual greed. You understand, huh? For example, I'll tell you the difference. Say there is one neophyte devotee in our community and there is an advanced devotee. Now both of them can want the same thing but for two different motives. For example, one senior devotee thinks, oh, I have built a big house, but what is the use? My spiritual master has never come and stayed in my house. And I have kept one room for him. I have made the full altar there. I have put everything in saffron for him. How nice if he comes and stays here. So he goes to the temple president and says, Prabhu, you come and see my house. If you think it's fit place, Guru Maharaj can come and stay. So he has a very genuine aspiration, that senior devotee. But he sees that Guru has stayed. Every time he visits four or five other places, he has stayed. So he is requesting, Prabhu, please consider this place also. Anytime you want to give me a call, Guru Maharaj comes, he can stay here. Yes. And there is another neophyte devotee in the congregation who is looking at all the places where Guru has stayed. Now, he wants to prove to the congregation that Hamare ghar mein bhi Guru tahe rahe hain. Main isko dikha dunga sabko. You know, he's a neophyte devotee. So he is envious that so many. Aisa nahi ki Guru Maharaj ne ek baar tahe raha, har baar idhar hi tahe rahenge. Aise mein kar dunga, itna bada ghar banaunga. Right, no? He can make such a big house, such a big facility. He may want to capture the Guru and put him in the house. And every time Guru has to stay there only, correct, no? So, how many of you understand the difference between these two people? You understand, huh? One has an aspiration to serve Guru, one has an aspiration to use Guru. So, we say Guru Bogi, Guru Sevi. Correct, no? So, Parikshit comes in which category? Guru Sevi. So, there is a transcendental greed also. That, like for example, even amongst brahmacharis, some brahmacharis are doing exceedingly well. They are bringing great results. See, another brahmachari is trying to preach. He is not able to get results. His heart is lamenting. See, he is doing so well. So let me also do something and please my superiors. I want to see a smile on the face of the superior. I want to do something wonderful. That is not counted amongst the envy. Envy means what? Para utkarsha asahishnuta. When you see utkarsha of the other people, you cannot tolerate. That is called envy. That is due to neophyteness. Whereas Parikshit is not neophyte. See, in the transcendental platform also these type of aspirations are there, which are glorified actually. If it is not glorified, Prabhupada won't write about it. Here Parikshit is feeling like this, and there Yudhishthira is feeling, and both are great souls. You see, Parikshit is a Vishnu Rat, protected by Lord Vishnu. And Yudhishthira has already captured Krishna's heart. And both great devotees are, and they are actually feeling like this due to their, you know, transcendental humility. They have such a humility in their heart. The transcendental position brings forth such greed to serve the Lord. This should not be. Similarly, when Satyabhama is asking, why did you give the Parijata to Rukmini? Why you are not giving me? We should not even in the least think. I think, you know, Satyabhama is a little envious lady, you know. We should not think like that. To even think like that is an offense. Because Satyabhama, exactly her heart knows, what should I speak by which Krishna will become pleased? So when Satyabhama is adamant, asking for a Parijata, Krishna becomes so pleased. And then Krishna goes to another place and he laughs there. Prabhupada says, he likes to see the quarrel between his queens. Prabhupada says, sometimes Krishna gets good fun seeing this. So Lord, that means Lord enjoys. So she knows, I can give pleasure to the Lord. And she may not plan to give pleasure to Lord. Her behavior only is in such a way that she will behave in a way Lord gets pleased. But that is the nature of Satyabhama. So we have to know, just like for example, sometimes a son adamantly may ask the mother, Mama, I am coming home. If you don't make bendi, you know, bendi sabji or baingan fry, I will not eat anything you cook, he says. So it may appear that the son is unnecessarily adamant. Who knows whether in market you will get baingan to make baingan fry or you will get bendi to bendi sabji. In case mother is unable to get, how can the son be so adamant? Why is this fellow so disobedient? Somebody may ask like that. But you ask the mother, when your son spoke like that on the phone, how did you feel? What do you think mother will feel? Not just happy, she will go mad. She will be so happy, she will tell her friend, oh, mera beta itna prem karta hai mujhe, itna mamta hai usko mujhe, demand karke kata hai, maang kar kata hai. So any mother feels great joy when the son demands, you cook this for me, cook that for me. Because they consider the child like life and soul. They want to please the child. So similarly, Krishna pleases Satyabhama, he pleases Rukmini. So when, actually Krishna wants Rukmini also to demand like that, but unfortunately she faints. Isn't it? Because she is what she is. Correct, no? She, when Krishna wanted her also to become like Satyabhama, that was not working out. Isn't it? So we should not consider this as non-celebration of other Vaishnavas. One shouldn't think like that. So, Nishikata Goswami is encouraging the hearer appropriately by knowing his mind. And it is the duty of every preacher that whoever is under us, we should actually give them a feeling that you are not totally not doing anything. You are also doing something. You are doing this. This is good. This you are doing well. Because encouragement is a very powerful weapon in this world. In order to, you know, because one disciple of Prabhupada was telling me, we never had such great hopes in ourselves as much as Prabhupada had in us. Prabhupada was talking as if we are world leaders and he's going to deliver the whole world through us, and we were wondering, we were not even proper followers also. At that time, we were such wayward people. You know, we were trying to escape from Prabhupada only. You know, we were not even following him. We were struggling to follow our regulative principles, and he was making us world leaders, and he wanted us to accept continents and deliver the whole people in the continent. You know, he told, you take this continent, you take that continent. Because he had too much hopes from us. After seeing his hope, we didn't want to, you know, put him off. At least something we should do. Therefore, the hopes of a superior in a subordinate is greatly encouraging to the subordinate. That's the point. So completed the 18th. 19th translation. See, Yeah, 19th translation read, we'll conclude with that, yeah. Yes, 19th.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhadev, was fully aware of his true identity. Therefore, he was self-sufficient and he did not desire external gratification. There was no need for him to aspire for success, since he was complete in himself. Those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions and create an atmosphere of materialism are always ignorant of their real self-interest. Out of his causeless mercy, Lord Rishabhadev taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the Lord who appeared as Lord Rishabhadev.
This is like a summary. So there is one point there that Prabhupada writes, if you see. In the fourth line, Prabhupada says, Lord Rishabhadev became self-sufficient. We should not create unnecessary demands due to bodily conception, like the Prabhupada says. So this is one lesson also I already told you. Correct, no? Rishabhadev teaches detachment. He says, for sense gratification, don't work very hard. He told that. So Prabhupada says here this point, that he was always self-sufficient. Therefore, we should not create unnecessary demands due to bodily conception. And if we create too many demands, then the demands will devour us and we will get lost. You know that saying? You know, do not increase your wants and become a beggar. Reduce your needs and live like a king. We'll repeat this. Do not increase your wants and become a beggar. Reduce your needs and live like a king. You understand, no? Because, you know, the more you possess, more the maintenance. Correct, no? And more the material maintenance, then the more time is swallowed away. When time is swallowed, not only time and energy, both are swallowed. Practical example, Prabhupada says, economic development means, Prabhupada defines, economic development means converting a thatched cottage into a skyscraper building. Like that he says. That's the definition of economic development Prabhupada gives. See, a thatched cottage will take you, you know, just 5 days to make in a village. 4 or 5 days. In fact, you go to GEV, Govardhan Eco Village. There, Gaurang Prabhu showed me, we were standing on a terrace from one place. He showed me, see, all the college boys and girls, they are making our mud huts. I was surprised. So the boys and girls who come there for that, so they are eager to do something, activity. So they are taught that take this mud, mix the mud first, they mix it, and put it in the machine and then make mud blocks. And it dries for a while. And then you have to pass it from one hand to another. And then they place it and they make the wall. And within 2 days, 3 days, they make mud huts. 2 to 3 days, mud hut is ready. Very easily. And then you have to put that in the top, this thing. So he was telling how quick and easy it is to make a Vedic house. Correct, no? On the other hand, you see these kinds of big flats which they make. How much time this takes to make? Correct, no? It goes months and years it takes. And a mud hut to take 1 lakh, you can build a house very easily with all furnished facilities inside. Whereas these houses, if you want 60 lakhs for 2 BHK. Correct, no? So see the cost. So, and for building a mud hut, you don't need a very big job and money. 1 lakh anybody can get. But to get 60 lakh, you have to pay EMI every month. Practically 15, 20 years people keep paying to give it back. Therefore, they have to work in companies, traveling far away. So Prabhupada said, don't try to convert a thatched cottage into a skyscraper building. So because if you are trying to convert thatched cottage into a skyscraper building, then all your time goes in making money, making the skyscraper building and maintaining it, and your human energy is spoiled. That's the point. Number one, human energy is spoiled. Number two, your time is wasted. Lot of time goes. Because in city, people work 16 hours a day to buy a house. You take any young boy who is getting married, now he has to buy a house. Nowadays, many parents also don't have their family, what do you call it, their savings, you know. Not all parents are able to give their children some money to buy a house. Some parents are able to, some parents are not able to. They themselves have a small house in village. So because of that, the son has to take a loan. So if they take a loan and buy a house, all life he works hard paying money back to fill up the loan, his human energy is finished. There is no time for devotional service. Therefore, Prabhupada said that the congregation who are serious devotees, they go to the farm where they can make simple mud huts and live peacefully, chanting the holy name, attending morning program, take simple prasad, take care of the cows, and live close to nature, admire the Lord's creation, go back to Godhead. That is Prabhupada's plan. Of course, it is more easily said than done. You know, it looks very colorful when I present it to you. But when you have to do it, many people will find it difficult to move out of the city and go to the village. Because one fellow in Dadar was telling me, he actually lost his job in Bombay once, and he took up a job in Pune. He got another job in Pune. So he was somewhere in Chakan or this Bosri or somewhere. So within 3 months he left that job and went back to Bombay. Then I asked him why. He said, Prabhu, I am used to running in Bombay. In Pune nobody is running. Pune life is more cool. It's more like, it's like a village for me. He said, when I was living in this place, my hands, legs are itching to run fast. I have to run somewhere because in Bombay people run. They get used to running. If you put him here, he'll run from here to the door. He cannot walk fast, slowly. Everybody is running in Bombay like that. So people get addicted to running like that. You see, city life is like that. So therefore Prabhupada is saying here, we living entities are partners of the Supreme Lord, which follow the instructions of Rishabhadeva and become self-sufficient. We should not create unnecessary demands due to the bodily conception. So, you know that story of that, what do you call it? This one. Two minutes to watch that. Hey, you have my sound just now? Sound? He's going to connect the wire. It's only 2 minutes only. Watch this. This will have better impression than my speaking. Ready? Can you put the mic quickly? I start. Work or they should work. See, you do one thing, a simple thing, get one this thing. Ah, this you put it, this is good. This is good enough. Yeah, put this. Everyone, put this. Put this on. Horrible, horrible. This is not the time to do the okay, till Hare Krishna. This is also not working. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. See, we should not create unnecessary demands due to bodily conception. Anyway, let us proceed with our... And later on, 4-5 lines later, Prabhupada says, he says, satisfaction through self-realization is called Swarupananda. He says, if you see 4-5 lines later, you saw it? Na shochidana kangshati. The conditioned soul, eternally sleeping in darkness, does not understand his self-interest. He simply tries to become happy by making material adjustments. But this is impossible, he is saying. To try to become happy by adjusting the material atmosphere is a useless endeavor. See, this is the most important thing. Please repeat the sentence. To try to become happy by adjusting the material atmosphere is a useless endeavor. See, this is the sum and substance of this purport. He says that all living entities in this world want to somehow adjust and live in this world. If it is too hot, they put air conditioner. If it is too cold, they put a heat pump. If they feel the leg pain, they have a vehicle to take them. So in this way, they go on adjusting to the material atmosphere and never take to spiritual life seriously. By his personal behavior and instructions, Lord Rishabhadev enlightened the conditioned soul and showed him how to become self-sufficient in his spiritual identity. Actually, great souls like Rishabhadev are teaching us, you don't even need a dress also. And we don't need to depend on anyone or anything. Completely depend on Lord Vasudeva. So that is a very high standard of, you know, self-sufficiency. We may not be able to imitate that much, but at least we can accept minimum needs and not increase our needs. That's the lesson that Prabhupada is deriving from here. And the more we derive satisfaction through self-realization, it is called Swarupananda, in our own Swarupa. So, So, now we have completed the Rishabhadev section. Now we are going to start King Bharata's section. So, I would suggest that you can do 5 minutes Gayatri break we will take. And then I will take five minutes later after one also. So, now you take a 5 minute break. Because we are going to go to a new section, Bharat Maharaj section. Hare Krishna. So Rishabhadev chapter started from which chapter? Chapter number? Three, yeah. 3, 4, 5, 6. 4 chapters. Now we are beginning Bharat Maharaj's chapter. 7, up to 15. 7 to 15 is how many chapters? Almost 7? 8 chapters almost. But this time we are only supposed to complete 7, 8, 9. And then after that, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So, this chapter is very short. You see, 7th chapter has only 2 themes only. I mean, 2 sections only. First section talks about Bharat Maharaj's rule and sacrifices. And second section talks about his retirement from the kingdom and going to forest and performing austerities in the forest. That's all. 2 sections only here. So, it will go pretty fast. How many shlokas total in this chapter? Let's see. Activities of King Bharata. Yeah, see here in Subodhani Guide, page number 59. There are only two sections. Bharat sacrifices, rule and sacrifices, and Bharat's retirement. So we will only highlight on those shlokas which need to be spoken. See, if you go through this, Subodhani Guide, page number 59, see, marriage is mentioned there. Bharat, the first son of Rishabhadev, he was a Mahabhagavad devotee. And then he was interested in the rule of the earth. He married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwarupa. And then, see, one example is given there. Just as the false ego creates five subtle sense objects, Bharat begot five sons and his wife, Sumatir, and all those names are given there. And Bharat Varsha, earlier it was Ajanabha Varsha during Rishabhadev's time, now it is called as Bharat Varsha. And then perfect rule, like his grandfather, father, everybody, you know, he was doing all his duties with great affection. And sacrifices, one highlight in Bharat Mara sacrifices, I will read out from the Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, very important commentary. He says that Bharat Maharaj engaged priests in doing the Vedic sacrifices, Karmakanda sacrifices. Now people may ask, if you say he's a pure devotee, then why did he perform such sacrifices? Somebody may have a question. So that is explained there. There are two roads. One is the Dharmartha Kama Moksha road. Another road is Shuddha Bhakti road, which is Abhavarnashrama Dharma. So pure devotees follow which road? No, they follow Shuddha Bhakti road only. But because the janta, the total public, they are still on the Dharmartha Kama Moksha platform. So for their sake, the king also would perform sacrifices. Otherwise, people will get confused. For example, if some demigod worshipper, he is incompetent to come to Shuddha Bhakti. If you criticize demigods, what he will do? He will stop that demigod worship also. And he will not come to Shuddha Bhakti also, and he will become a Nastik. A Astik becomes a Nastik. So is it good service done? It's very dangerous. So therefore, even we in our preaching also, we should not stop people from worshipping devatas. If somebody is worshipping Ganesha, or Skanda, or worshipping Devi, or Shiva, they have some worship. So we preach to them in such a way that they should be elevated from that demigod platform, worshipping platform, to Krishna worshipping platform, Shuddha Bhakti. And we should not talk ill of the demigod, rather we should bring them to the point of appreciating Krishna worship and all the demigods, as Bhagavatam says, Deva Narayanangaja, they are all parts of Narayana. We should be able to give them the vision. In case they don't understand their vision, they should continue to worship their demigods. So Nastik is the lowest. Above Nastik is Astik, who is worshipping devatas. Then there is Astik, who is doing Shuddha Bhakti. Correct, no? So the kings in the Vedic times, because the Shastras say, Devan Bhaveta Anena Te Deva Bhavayantuva, you know, like the devatas should be worshipped by the praja, by the people, and then the devatas will give profuse supply in return. Correct, no? So that's what people know. And people want to see that Indra is being worshipped, Surya is worshipped, all these offerings are done, Ahuti is done. Correct, no? Therefore, sometimes even you visit your home, they may be doing some yajna for the devatas. That's possible. Correct, no? If somebody says, Hare Krishna devotee goes to his home and says, hey, I don't believe in all this. You know, you are worshipping Surya for health. My health comes from Krishna directly. So then people get confused. How this boy has become spoiled. In the name of Hare Krishna, he doesn't respect anybody. They feel like that. So Madhvacharya says, a devotee of the Lord also respects the demigods. In fact, any devotee who offends the demigods is also offender of the Supreme Lord. I can show you quote. It's coming in where, I'll tell you. It's coming in the 11th canto, Madhyam Adhikari, elaboration. There, one of the verses. There, Madhvacharya commentary is given there. Madhvacharya says that the devatas are all favorable to worship of Lord Vishnu. They themselves are servants of Lord Vishnu and they should not be offended. They should also be respected and adored. But they should not be worshipped exclusively independent of Lord Vasudeva. Like that the point is made. So now Another point about his sacrifices, while doing sacrifice, he would always meditate on Lord Vishnu. Indraya Swaha, when the Ahuti would be given, he would think of the hand of Lord Vishnu. Suryaya Swaha, he would think of the eyes of Lord Vishnu. Whenever any Ahuti was offered, that predominating deity of that particular limb of the body, he would, when it would be offered, Ahuti is offered, he would remember that part of the Lord's body. So that is coming in this 7th chapter. Very beautiful explanation is given. So I will tell you where Chakravarti Thakura explains this. See, this is 5, 7, 6. So there you can, the purport is a little difficult. Chakravarti Thakura's purport is a little complicated here. So maybe we can read that now and then we can, because that's one of the main themes here. Read it. Yeah.
The Lord has said,
Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadauva shraddha yavan na jayate. See, shraddha yavat na jayate. As long as you have not yet awakened the shraddha in shravanam and kirtanam. Up to the point you have not yet awakened shraddha in shravanam kirtanam. What is the meaning of that? Actually, we should get a conviction that if I simply hear and chant Krishna's glories, that is dharma, there is nothing beyond that. That alone I will do and I don't need anything else. When you develop the conviction, at that time what you can do? Tavat, up to that point, karmani kurvita. One should perform karmakanda, like there is saying, sacrifices for all the devatas. Please read the translation.
One should continue to perform the Vedic ritualistic activities until one actually becomes detached from material sense gratification and develops faith for hearing and chanting about me.
Yeah, because when you do Vedic ritualistic activities, you get material sense gratification. But then if material detachment has started coming by Shravanam and Kirtanam, then one doesn't need to do ritualistic activities anymore. Correct, no? As he is saying. 11:29, okay. 11th chapter, 11th canto, 20th chapter, 9th verse, yeah. Read it.
How is it that Bharat, a person qualified for pure devotion, with deep faith in the topics of Lord, and without material desire, performed karma yoga and enjoyed its results? This verse explains this. When he performed various sacrifices, in which all the elements were executed, there was an astonishing result called dharma. He thought of this result as an offering to Supreme Brahman Vasudev, his deity. He thought, I do not have any desire for results of this sacrifice. It is for the pleasure of Vasudev. It is offered to Vasudev. It is not mine. The Mimamsakas believe, however, that the results are for the performer. If the desires for results of the performer are prominent, or for the devatas, where the actions were directed predominantly to devatas. Since Bharat was without material desires, the result should go to devatas. Why then did Bharat think of offering the results only to Vasudev, when there are many devatas like Chandra and Surya? He thought of Vasudev, the enjoyer of results of the sacrifice, Yajna Purushe, as the controller of all devatas, who are goals of the mantras which reveal the devatas. Bharat may not be the enjoyer, but he cannot avoid being the performer of sacrifice. No, Vasudev is also the performer, since he is the independent doer, inspiring all others to action as the antaryami of all beings. The sponsor of the sacrifice, who is not independent, is not the performer. If we do not accept this principle, the priest would be called the performer, since he directly performs the sacrifice. This is understood from Vishnu Sahasranama Stotra, Yagna Bhuk Yagna Krit Yagna. Vishnu is the enjoyer of sacrifice, the performer of sacrifice, and sacrifice itself. Though the Lord is independent, Jiva thinks that he is the performer out of ignorance and becomes bound up. By his skillful thinking, Atma Naipunya, Bharat destroyed the contamination of impressions arising from action. It should be understood that though the devotee who is freed of identity as a doer and has renounced all results of actions, performs actions through his representative, such as Adhvaryu priest, he is not the doer since he does not have faith in those actions.
See, I will explain till now. What is the essence of this? You see, sometimes you take part in a Vedic sacrifice held in your home. So your faith is in chanting Hare Krishna. But somebody else who is performing sacrifice, their faith is in the Vedic rituals. Correct, no? So your purpose of participating in the yajna is to just, respect the sentiments of your relatives for which you participate. Although you, in your heart of hearts, you know, Krishna is the, total whole, Supreme Lord. These things are not necessary, but we participate in them just to respect their sentiments. Then the results of the sacrifice don't come to you. Is that point clear? Okay. Now one more point is made here. If you offer worship to the demigods with the prayer that you please accept this worship and I don't want anything in return, then the yajna phal will go to the demigods only. You understand? And they won't give you anything. That's what he's saying. In the previous he said. But karmakandi puja doing people, most of them cannot do like that. Because their very purpose of doing sacrifice is to get something in return from that. But the moment they get something in return, those material objects become a cause of their material sense gratification, and the result of material sense gratification is suffering. Whereas what devotee will do, if somebody offers, demigod says that you have done this puja for me, I want to offer you material sense gratification. What devotee will say? No, I don't want. I only want Shuddha Bhakti to Krishna, you keep it with you. Then the demigod keeps it with himself only. Although demigods are very eager to give many material benedictions to devotees also, they won't accept. That one point was made before. By not accepting material sense gratification from demigods, a devotee is freed from material suffering also. Because another name for material suffering is material objects. Material objects lead to material sense gratification lead to material misery. So a devotee avoids material misery by not accepting any gifts from the demigods. That's one point made. Is that clear? That point is clear? Now another point is made here, third point, that the priests, sometimes you may engage them to perform the sacrifice and the priests become themselves the yajaman because they have faith in that sacrifice also. And they offer worship, ahutis to the demigods also. And that produces dharma, artha, kama, moksha results. But you are not touched by it because your faith is in Lord Vasudeva. Like that he says. Therefore, it is possible for a Vaishnava devotee to do yajna and like a practical example is this. I don't have to tell you a complicated example. Srila Prabhupada at the time of opening the Vrindavan temple, Krishna Balaram temple, he told that many of the Indian people, especially elderly people, will expect that we have to perform some Vedic sacrifice and yajna, call the brahmanas and do. But one side he said, let this go on, and the other side you do kirtan. Kirtan can go on. Actual thing, kirtan is itself sankirtan yajna. That's good enough in this age. But if you do only that, many people will feel that something is missing because they have more faith in, more shraddha in the Vedic sacrifice. So for their shraddha, if you allow them to do the Vedic sacrifice, then they will come to temple and they will also benefit a little bit from devotion service also. With predominant faith in the Vedic sacrifice, with little faith in devotion service, they will preserve their dharma. But in the temple, if there is no Vedic sacrifice, they will label your temple as Angrez Mandir and they will never come. And by not coming, instead of dharma, they will follow adharma. Correct, no? Therefore, he says, the result of performing such sacrifice, like in Pune temple, we had this Sudarshan Homa in the beginning. 8,000 people participated in that. Do you know that? When we connected the Sudarshan Homa in the beginning of this, in the same land we did it. So 8,000 participants. Everybody had the sheet and they participated in that. Because people come for such a program. Imagine you say we have Bhagavad Gita class today evening. 8,000 people will come. Or we have Ekadashi, 24 hours chanting, does the hall get filled with 4,000 people? You know? Because people have faith in something. So, if people have faith in that thing, okay, give them a chance to perform dharma in that way. That was the idea of whom? King Bharata. So he because most people are stuck on the Dharmartha Kama Moksha platform. So he gave them the opportunity. So the Advarya priest, he becomes the representative and he becomes the performer of the action, while the king remains aloof sakshi. And then the shloka is given here. Let's recite this one. Ashraddaya hutam dattam tapastaptam kritam chayat asat ityuchyate partha nachatat pretyano iha.
O son of Pritha, whatever is offered in the fire, whatever is given in charity, whatever is undertaken as austerity, but which is done without faith is called asat, since it bears no result now or in the next life.
Then he explains this. Really?
It is said that devotees such as Amrish, absorbed in performing pure bhakti all day long, conducted sacrifices handed down by tradition from father and grandfather through representatives. It is seen,
although they themselves became pure devotees, correct, no? But the father and grandfather, they were doing certain sacrifices, which in case if they don't do, the public will criticize them. The public will say that in your family tradition this was coming down and why you are not doing, they will ask. So they did it, yeah.
It is seen at the present time as well, that householder devotees, well established in the western states, perform the karma such as marriage, or receiving the sacred thread through a representative, since they fear contamination with local customs and with the total lack of varna and dharma. The results do not occur to the impure person in the verse Tavat Karani Kurvita, because the Atmane Pada form of the verb is an order. Thus, Shuddha Sattva devotee certainly has no fault in doing actions through representative. In the definition of pure bhakti, indicating that bhakti should be devoid of karma, jnana, it is stated, jnana karma adi anavritam. Some people explain that this means that bhakti remains pure even though one engages in karma by employing an agent to perform sacrifice, because bhakti is not covered by karma if one remains constantly engaged in hearing and other acts of bhakti. We cannot attribute fault of doing karmas to Bharata if he acts thus. But how can one say that his bhakti is pure if there is worship of many devatas in the sacrifices? Bharata, the sponsor of the sacrifice, meditated on devatas, the receivers of the offerings, as the limbs of Lord.
This is what I was telling you.
When the priest said, Indraya Swaha, he thought, This is the worship of arm of my Lord. When the priest said, Suryaya Swaha, he thought, this is worship of the eye of my Lord. Worshipping each devta independently would destroy ananya, or the exclusive aspect of bhakti. But worshipping them as limbs of Lord does not destroy it.
Yeah, you understand? Huh? Actually, in bhakti, there is ananya bhakti. Huh? Ananya bhakti becomes broken if somebody develops more faith in a demigod than in the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, if one sees all the demigods as limbs of the Supreme Lord, you can see this. Repeat this verse. Narayana Paraveda Deva Narayana Angaja Narayana para loka, Narayana para makaha, Narayana param jnanam. Sorry. Narayana paro yogo, Narayana param tapah, Narayana param jnanam, Narayana para gatihi. So there must be two more, I think. So, similar verse is there in Bhagavatam also, another verse on Vasudeva. Vasudeva para veda, Vasudeva para makaha, Vasudeva para yoga, Vasudeva para kriyaha. Vasudeva param jnanam, Vasudeva param tapaha, Vasudeva paro dharmo, Vasudeva paragatihi. Similar verse. But I showed you this, why? See, read the translation.
The Vedic literatures are made by and are meant for the Supreme Lord. The demigods are also meant for serving the Lords as the parts of His body. The different planets are also meant for the sake of Lord, and the different sacrifices are performed just to please Him.
See? The second line says, Nara Deva Narayana Angajaha. Narayana Angajaha. That means they are all born from the limbs of the body of the Lord. They are assisting hands. See, Angaja means they are assisting hands. They are assisting hands of the Lord. They are like right hand, left hand men of the Lord. Huh? All the devatas should be seen like that. They should not be seen independent of the Lord. Like that the Bhagavatam teaches very nicely. So, therefore the ananyata in the bhakti of Bharat is not destroyed by his worship of the devatas. Like for example, even Arjuna went to the Durga's temple before the war, Kurukshetra war. Huh? Even our Rukmini is taken to Ambika's temple. You know, because he is a Chatrani. So Chatriya woman, before the marriage, they are supposed to go to Durga temple. But in Durga temple, if you see what she prayed, what she prayed? See what Rukmini is praying. Rukmini is going to the temple, and then here you will find this is summary only. It must be in the inside. This is Ambikalaya. This is the one. It says here, see. Kanya Chantaha Purat Pragar Bhaktair Guptika Gupta Ambikalayam. Here it comes. And she goes, there were already Brahmanis. Brahmanis means Brahmana ladies who taught how to worship Ambika to her. You will see that. Accompanied by her mothers and girlfriends, protected by king's valiant soldiers who held their upraised weapons as the ready. At the ready, she simply absorbed her mind in the lotus feet of Krishna. She is going to Ambika's temple, but remembering Krishna and mridangas, panavas, everything is sounding. She is offering many things and well adorned Brahmana's wife, singing and reciting prayers, and singers, musicians, bards, everything. So now she has reached the goddess. She came into the presence of Mother Ambika. Now she is going to pray now. We'll say two verses. Tam vai prabhayaso balam vidignya viprayoshitaha bhavanim mandyam chakrur bhavapatnim bhavan vidam. Yeah. Tam vai prabhayaso balam. There were girls of her age group who were her sakis. Along with them, Vidignya Vipra Yoshitaha. Yoshitaha, the woman, the Brahmana woman, Vipra Yoshitaha, Vidignya, they taught her the rules and regulations to be followed inside the Ambika temple. Bhavani, Vandyam, they told her to bow to Bhavani, who is Bhavapatni, Shiva's wife. So now they are teaching her, and how she is praying, you can see. This is the prayer they told her to recite. Namaste Twambike Abhikshnam.
Namaste
Twambike. Swasantana Yutam Shivam. Bhuyat Patirme Bhagavan Krishnas Tadanumodatam. See how she is praying. Namaste to Ambike Abhikshnam. I continuously offer obeisances to you, O Ambika. Sva Santana Yutam. You have two sons, one side Ganesh, one side Kartikeya. And along with your husband Shiva, you are sitting. Bhuyat, let it be Patirme as husband. Who? Bhagavan Krishna, Lord Krishna. Tat Anumodatam, please make it happen. Favorable. Like that she is praying. So you will find this in this way. So she is going to Ambika's temple but praying to attain Krishna as her husband. You can see that. And she is remembering Lord Krishna even in that temple. Similarly, Bharat Maharaj also is performing the sacrifices for the welfare of Praja. But his heart is fixed on Lord Vasudeva, remembering Lord Vishnu in his mind. So that this is one thing which, therefore I spent some time elaborating on this. So other verses are simple. Now it is time now, we will take a break for lunch. When you come back,